It is Tuesday, May 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the White House says acting director of the CIA, Gina Haspel, is the best candidate for the job, but her nomination remains controversial.
Her involvement in the Thailand detainee camp and the memo concerning the destruction of videotapes that has her in hot water with Democrats.
The Vatican begins an aid program for Venezuelans fleeing their country as its economy sinks, and summer blockbuster films indicate a profitable season. It's all ahead. The White House is defending Gina Haspel as the best person to head the Central Intelligence Agency the day before a confirmation hearing. Haspel faces some opposition and has been meeting with senators ahead of her hearing. She's reportedly assured them, if confirmed, she would oppose a revival of brutal interrogation techniques. If confirmed, the 61-year-old Haspel would be the first woman to lead the agency, succeeding Mike Pompeo, who was recently confirmed as Secretary of State. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman speaks with me about the controversy surrounding Haspel's nomination.
Sarah, Gina Haspel is a career CIA operative in the clandestine service who rose through the ranks. And in many ways, she would be the picture-perfect person for the job and get an absolutely unanimous confirmation, but for two things. Number one, after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, she oversaw one of the CIA's secret detention facilities, and that was a location where terror suspects were subjected to waterboarding, sleep deprivation, in some cases extreme physical abuse, things that some people regard as torture. And years later, when it came to be known that there were videotapes of some of these sessions within the CIA's possession, apparently, according to reports, Gina Haspel authored a memo that supporting the destruction of those videotapes. And in fact, those tapes did disappear. These are two black marks against her, according to many Democrats and one Republican by the name of Rand Paul of Kentucky. And Paul recently said, quote, "I don't think we should have someone in charge of the CIA who was running a torture camp in Thailand." And that is one Republican. There are many Democrats who say the exact same thing. But she would be the CIA's first female director. Apparently, she's very popular within the agency and within the intelligence community. And she has many Republican backers. But it is those two things, her involvement in the Thailand detainee camp and the memo concerning the destruction of videotapes, that has her in hot water with Democrats.
Now, apparently, though, she, I believe, did suggest that her name be withdrawn because of this controversy.
This has been swirling for weeks and weeks ever since President Donald Trump nominated her to take the place of Mike Pompeo, who left the CIA to become Secretary of State. When it all seemed to be coming to a head last week, apparently she got in touch with the White House and said, "Look, I am perfectly willing to withdraw my name." And apparently the White House convinced her not to. They said that they want to fight for her. And in fact, the White House has not wavered at all in terms of their support of her. And President Trump himself has put out several tweets saying that the reason that some senators oppose her is because she is too tough on terror.
What about people within the intelligence community? Because I have heard that a number of them favor her nomination.
From my Senate perch, Sarah, I don't have a very good window into members of the intelligence community, but I can say that where there has been opposition to her outside of Capitol Hill, it has not come from well-known members of the intelligence community, past and present. What it's come from are former military officers, and the concern that some of these retired officers have, and a number of them have gotten together and written a letter opposing Haspel. The concern that they have is that any torture that the United States inflicted on detainees after 9/11, if that's allowed to stand and there isn't a reckoning for that, then in fact any U.S. soldiers who fall into enemy hands could be subjected to the exact same treatment. So to the extent that there is opposition to her outside of Capitol Hill, I'm hearing it from human rights advocates, I'm hearing it from retired military personnel, but I'm not hearing it from some of the well-known figures of America's intelligence community.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. It is time now for social media. Officials from the U.S. Census Bureau and Commerce Department will answer questions on Capitol Hill Tuesday about the addition of a controversial citizenship question to the 2020 census form. Well, questioning respondents if they're citizens has not been done since the 1950s. In addition to gathering statistics about the U.S. population, the census is a tool used to decide the number of representatives each state gets in Congress. Critics of a citizenship question say that immigrants will be less likely to respond to census questions if they're confronted with one about citizenship. And that could change how much federal aid their communities get. Well, trending today is hashtag 2020 census. Representative Frederica Wilson tweets, including a citizenship question in the hashtag 2020 census only serves to suppress participation and will result in inaccurate data that does not reflect the makeup of our nation. But Mark Kristoff tweets, hashtag 2020 census, ask the damn question. Interesting to see how many non-citizens are actually in our great state of California. Tired of the libs pushing back. Take back our state from the idiots. Well, also trending is hashtag Woodhull 2. A 20-year-old study examining how nurses are represented in the media is getting a new look from the George Washington University School of Nursing. Elizabeth Madigan tweets, in 1997, nurses were quoted 4% of the time in newspapers. In 2017, nurses were quoted 2% of the time. Pam Jeffries tweets, nurses remain invisible in health news stories. Little change in the past 20 years. Presenter Diana Mason on Woodhull's study revisited nurses' representation in health news media. The GW School of Nursing tweets, female nurses in particular remain underrepresented as expert sources in news stories. And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are tweeting. A purported letter from the Afghan Taliban calls for peace. Pakistan says India decimated a rare moment of mutual peace. The Armenian parliament elects an opposition leader as the new prime minister. And New York's attorney general resigns after assault allegations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say our sun has been shining for about the last 4.5 billion years. The sun is expected to have enough hydrogen fuel in its core to shine for about another 5 billion years. Along with producing solar energy, this nuclear fusion is creating helium. Once the sun runs out of hydrogen, it will start fusing the helium and begin another 5-billion-year process that will eventually result in the sun's death. The helium fusion process will cause the sun to expand and transform itself into a red giant star. According to a new study, as the red giant expands, it will lose mass and expel gas and dust, which will form a massive glowing ring called a planetary nebula. The sun will be a white dwarf by then and will eventually die. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a Turkish court rules a U.S. pastor must remain in jail, which is stoking U.S.-Turkish tensions. Since last year, Pope Francis has gradually and carefully been stepping up his criticism of the suffering that Venezuela's people have been enduring under the government of socialist President Nicolas Maduro. This week, the Vatican announced an aggressive plan to aid the huge number of Venezuelans fleeing deteriorating conditions in the South American country. Reporting for VOA from Rome, Sabina Castelfranco reports on the Bridges of Solidarity project launched by the Holy See in partnership with South American bishops.
The ongoing crisis in Venezuela has produced a tremendous flow of emigration. Thousands of Venezuelans have fled the instability, soaring crime, shortages, and hyperinflation under Nicolas Maduro's socialist government. They have sought refuge largely in neighboring South American nations. To assist these immigrants, the bishops' conferences of eight countries, Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Peru, Paraguay, Chile, Bolivia, and Argentina have teamed up with the Vatican's office to promote integral human development. The humanitarian project Bridges of Solidarity, which was presented on Monday, will initially run for 24 months and is in line with Pope Francis's four-step plan for the assistance of migrants and refugees to welcome, protect, promote and integrate the displaced Venezuelans. Services offered through the project include the building of centers and shelters for migrants, assistance finding housing and jobs, the facilitation of access to education and health care, advocacy and legal assistance, professional training of pastoral workers, and awareness campaigns aimed at sensitizing local communities to the needs of migrants and the risks they face. For the last several months, Pope Francis has expressed his rising concern for the people of Venezuela in the face of growing disturbances.
Assicuro la mia preghiera per questa cara nazione.
Addressing pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square, he said earlier this year, "I assure my prayer for this beloved nation and express my closeness to the families that have lost their children in the riots." He has appealed for an end to violence. The Vatican's Office for Migrants and Refugees will be making available nearly $500,000 a year, which also includes private donations as well as funding from local dioceses. The aid is to be distributed among the eight nations involved in the project. Venezuela, with its enormous oil resources, was until recent decades Latin America's richest economy. It is now seeing much of its population leave. The IOM, the International Organization for Migration, said that between 2015 and 2017, the number of Venezuelan immigrants in Latin America increased by more than 900%, from 89,000 to 900,000 people. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
An American Protestant minister appeared for a second time at a Turkish courtroom Monday, in which he denied having ties to terrorist groups or engaging in espionage. North Carolina native Andrew Brunson faces up to 35 years in prison. His next court date is July 18th. The case has strained U.S.-Turkish relations. The U.S. Embassy's charge d'affaires, Philip Cosnett, and a member of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Sandra Jolly, were in the courtroom in Aliaga, north of Izmir, Turkey's third largest city, where Brunson has pastored a church for 23 years. The Brunson case appears linked to Turkey's demand for the extradition of U.S.-based exiled Muslim leader Fethullah Gulen, who's accused of orchestrating the 2016 failed coup, a charge he denies. The Nashville-based American Center for Law and Justice is handling Brunson's defense, and International Edition's Victor Beatty spoke with ACLJ Executive Senior Counsel Cece Heil.
This innocent pastor has been held in prison for over a year and a half. Now we've seen it with the 2 days of the court hearings of the trial, on one on April 16th and now today. The morning session, it was two secret witnesses. Their faces are blurred. Their voices are distorted. And then there were five open witnesses. But none of them had direct knowledge of Pastor Brunson doing anything wrong.
Specifically, he's being charged with links to a group led by a U.S.-based Muslim preacher, Fethullah Gulen, who UNCRA says was behind that 2016 failed coup. And also, he's being charged with espionage. What's the evidence?
There is no evidence. It is all hearsay and conjecture and speculation. Some of the secret witnesses literally just have Googled information, and they have put that into their testimony. There are no links to Pastor Brunson whatsoever. I can't say it enough. This is just a sham trial.
If there's no legal basis for his possible conviction, what are the political overtones here?
It absolutely seems that President Erdogan has twice now demanded a swap of Pastor Brunson for Fethullah Gulen, who is the Muslim cleric living in Pennsylvania. That looks like the end goal. That looks like, you know, the whole reason that Pastor Brunson was arrested in the first place was to be used as this bargaining chip, and that is what President Erdogan is holding out for.
This case has drawn the attention of Washington. The U.S. Embassy's charge d'affaires, Philip Kosnet, was present at the hearing today, along with Sandra Jolly, vice chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Jolly telling reporters she's seriously concerned by what she called wild conspiracies, tortured logic, secret witnesses, and no evidence.
She's 100% correct. Pastor Brunson is an innocent pastor, an innocent United States citizen who has been imprisoned for a year and a half for absolutely doing nothing wrong.
That's ACLJ Executive Senior Counsel Cece Heil. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. When it comes to blockbusters, bigger and bolder is Hollywood's focus for this summer, as the studios count on new and improved sequels to make up for last year's lackluster box office season. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
The end is near.
Avengers: Infinity War has blown past its $630 million record opening, the biggest ever, by creating a new formula, the largest ever pantheon of superheroes, including Black Panther, sharing the 2.5-hour screen time, explosive special effects in outer space, and an unpredictable ending.
I hope they remember you.
Nobody's ever done anything like this before. You're taking this many disparate franchises, really successful franchises, and combining them all into one movie, into one big finale.
The film cost $320 million to make, but within a couple of weeks, the Disney Marvel studio has way more than recouped its expenses. The film's departure from formulaic scripting may also signal a change towards more imaginative extravaganzas than in summers past.
I'm out of love. I'm so lost without you. I know you were right.
Dr. Tar!
2016's darkly satirical comic book movie Deadpool was such a success, grossing almost $700 million more than it cost to make, that 20th Century Fox produced a sequel.
It's showtime.
Don't call it a comeback!
Fans hope that Deadpool 2 will keep its off-the-grid deadpan mojo and deliver as original a plot as its predecessor. Walt Disney and Lucasfilm Studios are hoping to recoup the production cost of the sci-fi film Solo, A Star Wars Story. Oscar-winning filmmaker Ron Howard took over the director's chair from the original directors, who left over creative differences with the studios, and reshot 80% of the film. Howard's uncompromising quality standards, which pushed production costs over $250 million, have hyped the film about the early years of Star Wars hero Han Solo and his co-pilot Chewbacca.
Welcome to Jurassic World.
Bigger and Scarier also describes Universal's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. This time around, the dinosaur fleet is accompanied by an environmental message with humans saving the big lizards from extinction.
In 3.5 weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball. And we are going to rob it. Not the ball itself.
On the neck of Daphne Kluger.
The heist comedy film, Ocean's 8, features diamonds, glamour, daring, and a dynamic cast, helmed by Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, and Anne Hathaway. Warner Brothers Studios expects the film, an all-female spin off of Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's trilogy, will attract strong female audiences. And if none of this satisfies summer blockbuster fans, the latest installment of Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible franchise, Mission Impossible Fallout, should, as moviegoers come to watch how the megastar tops his previous stunts. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Sounds like a lot of action there. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In July 2017, while announcing the liberation from ISIS of Mosul, the largest city in Nineveh province, Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said that returning children to school as quickly as possible was the Iraqi government's top priority. But fulfilling this intention turned out to be a difficult challenge. That's because ISIS's strategy was to not only inflict maximum casualties both on Iraqi security forces and on the local populace, but also to stall economic redevelopment in communities they once held. So, as ISIS fighters retreated from town after town, they left behind a landscape sown with explosive hazards, set particularly around critical infrastructure. This certainly held true for Nineveh province. After liberation, the landscape was still littered with unprecedented levels of improvised explosive devices, unexploded ordnance, landmines, and other explosive remnants of war. The U.S. Department of State, through its implementing partner, Janus Global Operations, has undertaken the complex and dangerous job of finding and removing these hazards from critical infrastructure associated with the delivery of health care, clean water, power, transportation, and education. Enabling the safe return of children to schools helps counter ISIS youth indoctrination, frees adults to participate in stabilization activities, and aids the return to normal life. In August 2017, Iraqi forces liberated the Nineveh province city of Tal Afar. By November, a Janus team was assessing what needed to be done to make the Al-Shoabaya primary school there functional again. In less than 2 weeks, Janus cleared anti-tank projectiles, small arms, and improvised explosive devices from the building and formally handed the site over to the school's headmaster. Janus also cleared similar explosive hazards from the Kiz Lisesi Secondary School, Tal Afar's only secondary education school for girls. As a result, 1,650 students have safely resumed their education. Janice went on to clear explosive hazards from the Al-Thawara Primary School for Boys in West Mosul, the Al-Jabal Primary School for Boys and Girls in Barzani, and many more. United States-funded clearance operations across Nineveh continue to play a pivotal role by ensuring that schools are free of explosive hazards, thus providing a safe space for children to learn as their families rebuild their communities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.